This is David Duke, broadcasting to the world on Web Radio. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may live upon the earth. And certainly it's an important broadcast for all people on the planet, because every nation, every race, every heritage faces the same overwhelming problem of Jewish supremacism. Not only does it affect the politics, such as what's going on in the Middle East right now, and the terrible possibilities for war, the conflict called World War IV that many of these Jewish extremists are trying to promote in the world, which will cause untold numbers of deaths and destruction, and on both sides really of this impending conflict. But it's also affecting us in terms of our culture and our values. Hollywood is about as Jewish as a bar mitzvah. And today I have a guest with me. He's been here before. He's always got a pretty good wit. Reminds me a lot of Mark Twain, by the way he talks. But his name is Bob Twain. Bob, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
And we wanted to focus, and I was discussing with you a little earlier about the new movie called
Brokeback Mountain?
Is that Cornhole Mountain or something like that? I don't know. I don't know the name of it, but it's pretty disgusting, you know, what's going on here. I mean, it's just really amazing the destruction of our culture and heritage from this alien Hollywood. Now, the director of the film was not a Jewish extremist, but the people associated with the film, directing the studios and so forth, and the Hollywood industry, which is promoting this film, is Jewish through and through.
Yeah, could I comment on that? It's not just, you know, a rather lurid movie or whatnot. There are plenty of those. I think the distinction here is, how's the audio and everything's fine?
Good.
Great. What they're attacking is the cowboy. Now, each culture has its own sort of mythology, its own value system, and so on. It has symbols that represent what that society values, what it emphasizes as a culture, as a people. And the cowboy has become almost a mythic status in American culture. It's one of the most American symbols there is, like the American eagle almost. And what does the cowboy represent? Honesty, hard work, integrity, masculinity, naturalness, all of these things. So if you really wanted to disgrace and humiliate American culture, you would go, if you wanted to go for the proverbial jugular or maybe even the carotid artery, you would attack the cowboy, which is exactly what they're going after, is the very symbol of what American masculinity embodies, and turn that into presumably some sort of a deviant of some sort.
Well, you know, the Washington Post did a current review. I just pulled it up on Google a few minutes ago. And as a quotation from the review, it says, conservatives will see the liberal tyranny of an entertainment culture forcing elitist progressive values on the reluctant red state millions, and in the process staining the purity of the most American of good old American generous, the Western, home of Duke Wayne, Gene Autry, and Roy Rogers. And so true. I mean, this is the ultimate slap in the face. You know, the white male has had so many attacks in so many ways in our society today. This is like the ultimate slap in the face of the red-blooded, heterosexual, normal, healthy white male in the United States of America. Here's cowboys, which is the image of our manhood for so many years. Every child grew up, you know, with playing cowboys and Indians. And they always wanted to play the cowboys. but we grew up in this genre. These were the men we looked up to, the ideas we looked up to, the America we looked up to. And now they're portraying these people as homosexuals. More important, the movie, basically is preaching to individuals, especially young people, that if you ever feel any tendency at all, if you feel lonely or if you feel in some ways attracted to somebody of the same sex, don't worry about it. It's fine. Go ahead and give in to whatever tweaked feelings you might have as a young man. In other words, don't fight the feeling. You know what I mean? Just go ahead.
If it feels good, do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And this, of course, is exactly the wrong thing to preach to young people. I mean, admittedly, a lot of young people, adolescents, and not just white people, this goes for any race. You know, they're in a situation, they're finding their identity. A lot of times they're not very successful with girls. You know, obviously boys hang with boys more. They go to Boy Scouts and the whole bit in school. And this gives an opportunity for an older male who is a homosexual to build a friendship with a boy and try to turn him.
Well, they already got into the Boy Scouts years ago. Whatever became of that? They wanted scout leaders who were open, you know, open.
Oh, the courts have been siding against the Boy Scouts, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't really have anything against these people, you know, and I don't want to pry into anybody's private life, you know, I want to say that right off. But it should be private. It shouldn't be portrayed in movies. It shouldn't be, like, you know, discussed on the, like, Barney Frank running around, jumping up and down, proclaiming what he does in his own home. I wish he'd just do it and shut up about it. I don't want to know.
Up until 20 years ago, even the American Psychological Association, which was very liberal, you know, left-wing, obviously, overwhelmingly Jewish-controlled, Freudian, basically, in its viewpoint, even they said that homosexuality was a deviant style of behavior and a pathological type of mentality, that it was a sickness and that needed to be, you know, worked on. Because again, and of course there's many reasons why homosexuality is very dangerous and damaging to society. We can start off right from the top. It's very dysgenic. You know, when we have a terribly low birth rate for our people, when you turn people into homosexuals, whether it be male homosexuals or lesbians, What you're doing is you're taking them out of the reproduction pool, and they're not reproducing themselves. So that's the first way. It's dysgenic. And of course, there is a degree of homosexuality that has a tendency that may be inherited from the genes or from even the amount of testosterone in the womb. I discussed that quite a bit in my awakening. But there also is a cultural aspect to this too. I mean, some homosexuals come to it from a cultural thing. Like I say, that lonely boy who's associated with an older man, and the older man,
the scout master or something, like
takes
that.
Him under his wing, and the young boy trusts him and believes in him, and then the older man tries to influence him, say, "Oh, it's okay, it's all right."
Yes, yeah,
and they take him.
Here's Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah,
it's okay, you're
right.
Like a cowboy.
They take him to the movies. That's right. Here's cowboys and everything, and it's perfectly normal. You know, here's a little quotation again out of the Washington Post, based on Annie Proulx's short story. It's a tale of two young cowboys, Innis Del Mar, Oscar-nominated Heath Ledger. By the way, they got more nominations of the Academy Awards than any other movie.
What was
the
guy, Innis or?
Innis, not penis, but Innis Del Mar, nominated Heath Ledger in a superb performance, and Jack Twist. Was also nominated, who are hired to spend the summer of 63 up in Wyoming's Brokeback Mountain tending a herd of sheep far from civilization. And we don't want to get into that subject. We're not going to get into bestiality here.
No,
both are of the rural proletariat, ranch-bred, horse-proud, sinewy, resourceful, brave, tough, industrious, poorly educated.
Except.
In other words, no, but then again, it's like they're the example of what a young man would look up to, right? They're proud, they're brave, they're tough, they're resourceful, they're cowboys, and, you know, they're all these things, and they're also homosexual. So it's like, it's okay, buddy. You can bet they don't care much about the sheep they've got to tend. They'd much rather spend time running a more noble beef cattle. So they've even got a nobility to them. Neither is a talker or a reader. Their only solace over the long nights is tailor-made smokes and whiskey neat. The last thing these two ever figured on is falling in love with each other.
It's a love story.
This is from the Washington Post. All right, the movie then jumps over the years four or five at a stretch as each fights against what turns out to be his true nature and forces himself to genuflect before the stations of the cross of heterosexual culture, marriage, family, responsibility. Yet if the love doesn't speak its name, it certainly sings its tune. The two sneak away over the years for trysts, and eventually each spouse learns the bitter truth. Finally, the inevitable tragedy and realization by one man of what a misspent life he's had. He should have been true to his own self. How happiness has evaded him forever. It's hard to argue the movie constitutes any kind of threat or prograde propaganda. Now, just after saying all this, he says it's hard to argue how the movie constitutes any. It's basically saying that these people, you know, they should have given in to their urges. And also, you notice how force a genuflect before the stations of the cross of heterosexual culture, marriage, family responsibility. What in the hell is wrong with that? In fact, isn't that the very foundation of our society, of our culture, heterosexual marriage, family, responsibility?
Even these two weirdos, they wouldn't even be here if it weren't for these stations of the cross. You know, that's how people are conceived and born, is through the natural process of child rearing. Yeah, I mean, this has really gone off the
deep end. They wouldn't even be there. That's right. These two homosexuals wouldn't even be there except for that. Now, look, I want to make something clear. I have no hatred toward homosexuals whatsoever, and I don't believe in the government spying on people and going into people's bedrooms or bathrooms or what the heck. You know, I don't even think the government should be spying on internet access or usage or whatever. But I can tell you one thing, that I don't think homosexuality should be presented to the masses and to our young people as a healthy, normal, alternative lifestyle.
Yeah, and it's not healthy. Good Lord, these people, if you look at their average lifespan, what is it, 40, 50-something? They have all kinds of
diseases. It's about over two decades shorter than a heterosexual.
Yeah, suicide, drug abuse, alcoholism.
Epidemics of terrible diseases such as AIDS, one of the most horrible, painful, disgusting, horrible life-shortening diseases the world's ever seen. And it is rampant, of course, among
and
homosexuals.
And communicable. Very communicable.
Absolutely. I mean, we can go on. Plus hepatitis.
Mm-hmm. Many How of them about just plain prostatitis? I mean, there are all kinds of diseases. Hemorrhoids. You see, I just finished one of my classes.
Let's not go into too many details on this program, but
It's not a medical discussion, but just take it from me. Medically speaking,
you're gonna gross us all out here.
It's not healthy.
No, it's not healthy. In fact, it's not even healthy for heterosexuals to practice that kind of sex.
Yeah, promiscuity is not healthy.
And it's not and that kind of sex of the homosexual kind, so to speak, even practiced by heterosexuals, is not healthy sex. It can lead to many health problems for both partners and the communication of many other diseases as well. But, you know, so I'm out of here, you know, I'm not in a big crusade against homosexuals, you know, and we're not trying to put homosexuals in relocation or re-education camps or something like that. God knows. But at the same time, certainly, this is not the kind of fare that should be promoted to the American people, to American young people, because inevitably they'll see this kind of movie. And the truth is that homosexuality people should be warned about this kind of behavior the same way they're warned about cigarette smoke. Homosexuality is a lot more dangerous than cigarette smoke in terms of lifespan, in terms of
I'm not absolutely sure statistically, but yeah, I'd just say I'd bet a wager that it is if you added up the numbers and so on. It may be worse.
Well, let me give you an example. Let's take a look at suicide. Homosexuals
how
commit
many
suicide.
Smokers commit suicide?
Yeah, at about over 10 times the rate of heterosexuals. I mean, we can go on and on about that. And it's a very dangerous lifestyle. It's not healthy, and it's certainly anti-society. It's destructive of society. And this is what we have. We have really a sick society that's presenting this. By the way, I want to mention something. I really hate to mention the name, but I will mention the name occasionally because. He's a persistent fly on the wall out there, and his name is Harold Covington.
Yeah.
And this guy is the most disgusting figure I've ever seen in my life. Of course, he operates under a lot of different email pseudonyms.
Oh, isn't Harold Covington sort of a pen name?
Who knows what he is? I mean, no, I think that's his original name, but he has about a dozen pen names. Well, I've just been reading. Right now, Nick Griffin is on trial, facing a possible, 7 years in prison, for so-called hate crimes in Britain. He's been leader of the British National Party. He's been fighting well and fighting strong. And this guy Covington is sick. I mean, he's sick. He's in there facing the trial. What is Covington? What has Covington faced? You know, he faced nothing, and he's in there without getting these emails saying, "Has Nick Griffin denounced homosexuality? Has he, you know, has he denounced buggery and all this other, you know, all this other stuff?" Putting all sorts of questions upon on Nick Griffin. I mean, this is really sick. You know, and I tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I've been in politics, obviously. And I'm also a commentator, and I write, and I editorialize, and I do books on these subjects, and I lay it out, all of it out there on the line. In my book, My Awakening, I talk about homosexuality. I talk about racial realities. I talk about Jewish supremacy. I talk about it all. But let me tell you something, and everybody should try to understand this. We must have a political wing of our movement, an absolute political wing of our movement. It's a must. You've got to engage in politics. You don't even have to even have a majority in government, but people, this is the way you get your ideas out. This is the way you mobilize people. This is the way you keep people active. Even if later you have a revolution of another sort in years next, you have to have a political activity. And let me tell you something. In politics, you don't get out there and you don't say the most radical or the most hard-hitting aspects of some philosophy. You talk about issues that are important to people. And when a man like Nick Griffin runs for office, he needs votes. He's not going to get any black votes. He's not going to get any West Indian votes. He's not going to get any Jewish votes. Okay? He's not going to get any of the white, self-hating liberal votes. And there are, unfortunately, a percentage of our population who are homosexuals. And it doesn't, and even though Nick Griffin does offer books, he sells my book, his website sells my book, that offers the truth about all these things, does not make sense for Nick Griffin or for anybody running for office in the United States to get up and to, you know, you can say, yes, I don't want homosexuality taught in the schools or whatever, but to make, you know, very strong, nasty statements and show hatred toward them will alienate every one of those votes. And believe it or not, even when I ran for office in Louisiana, and I was surprised, but had many people on the street, especially New Orleans is a lot, it would come up and they would say, you know, I'm homosexual, but I'm voting for you. I agree with you. The race problem is terrible. And please forget, I can't help the way, this is the way I am or whatever. I don't agree with his position. I'm not going to associate with those people, right? I'm sure not going to have any relations with those kind of people. But at the same time, you know, when you're running for office, you've got to focus on getting votes. And every time you alienate another section of the white group,
you've lost some votes.
Exactly right.
Well, the first thing you do is get elected. Then you go about implementing your political
agenda. Well, you've got, you know, again, there's a really a strong distinction between running for office and the things you say in office and the philosophies that you deal with and the data that you deal with. And you could be a writer and write all kinds of material, but when you get up and give a stump speech out there, all the media will take is those kind of words that they want to use you to alienate you from certain groups.
Yeah, you have to be very, very careful what you say because they will. They'll take it out of context. They'll blow it out of proportion.
Well, as you know, I'll tell you another example, you know, a very classic example. You know, I come from the city of New Orleans. I grew up in New Orleans. It's a very highly Catholic percentage of the white population. And I've had Catholic friends all my life. My father, in fact, was a Methodist, but we went to many different churches. We visited different churches. I had friends that went to Catholic church. I visited Catholic church quite often. Even when I was in Laos, because the finest preacher around there, the finest priest was Catholic. His name was Father Minger. I went to Catholic church on Sunday because it was just such a fantastic experience. So I've never had an anti-Catholic bone in my body. I've never made an anti-Catholic statement in my body. In fact, in many ways, I respect the Catholic Church for a lot of their conservative positions.
Well, especially now.
Well, that's exactly right. And but when I ran for office, one of the first things that the Jewish media tried to do was to say, oh, David Duke, because he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, which, and by the way, my Klan had Catholics and Protestants in it. You know, there was one Klan in the 1920s that was all Protestant. There was also a Klan, Knights of the White Camellia, that was all Catholic. But they tried to say that I was anti-Catholic and repeated that again and again and again without one iota of documentation, again, trying to draw a wedge between people. You know? So it's one thing to talk about the dangers of homosexuality and that it has to our culture, our race, our heritage, because of the genetic aspect, because of the health aspect, the danger it poses to young people, the fact that we don't want this lifestyle promoted. Again, we're not trying to go in people's houses and lock them up or drag them off to concentration camps. But at the same time, we my father put it very, very, very well a few years ago when he said, David, he said, look, I don't care what people do in the privacy of their bedroom, but as long as it's in the privacy of their bedroom. See, I don't like homosexuals walking around half naked in their underwear and parades in the middle of the streets in the middle of my town with a gay pride parade. You know, I don't like the situation where gays feel so emboldened that you go into a restroom and they might proposition.
Yeah, you know, if you smack them, you know, you get a little.
You can get a hate crime now.
Yeah, you'll be guilty. You're just going into the toilet to relieve yourself, and then, you know, about 5 seconds later, you're looking at a jail sentence of 10, 20 years.
Well, that's like the sexism of what's going on, too. I mean, let me ask you, if a man propositioned a woman, made sexual proposition on her, and a woman slapped him or hit him, would she ever be prosecuted in a million years?
No,
of course
pepper
not.
Spray right
no,
in the eyeball.
They'd prosecute him. They'd say sexual harassment.
Yeah.
That's what they prosecute him, not her. If a policeman came, she could have hit him. They would have grabbed the guy
and spray the guy.
They would have charged the man with assault if he would have said something that made some sort of sexual comment. But again, we have a lot of double standards going on here today. And to me, homosexuality, because it's not natural and because of the dangers that it poses to our people far more than some sort of, you know, men and women having sexual relations is far less of a danger to our race. In fact, it'd actually be positive to our race if they procreate. Right now, our people are dying, you know, even though they should procreate under the circumstances of having a family. They should procreate under the circumstances of making sure they can have the means to raise that child effectively. They should procreate in a way that they're not going to spread diseases, and fidelity is, you know, is something that's very positive and good for people. I think people should enter relationships, enter marriage, you know, build families, you know, but at the same, or at least a long-term relationship where they're, you know, have a healthy relationship.
Right. Oh, let me comment on that, too. Not only are, of course, STDs in and of themselves a problem, but with young people, one of the worst effects of STDs that are not, you know, deadly like AIDS or something, is that they can contribute to sterility, pelvic inflammatory disease, chlamydia, and so on, can lead to scarring of the fallopian tubes. In men, you can have prostate problems and so on. With the young people, promiscuity, if they catch these STDs, they can end up being sterile. I mean, that makes the whole demographic
especially,
issue even worse.
It's even more dangerous for women. Women become sterile much easier than men because they produce these eggs, and the fallopian tubes are very fragile organs, and just a little scarring of that area can prevent the egg from reaching the point of fertilization or coming down to the fertilization area.
Or even if it does, there can be long-term effects. The children can be less healthy and so on and so forth.
That's correct.
Let me comment for a moment here.
You can be more of an authority on this because you've completed a lot of your medical school now. So,
well, I'm still on my way, but give me a couple of years. But I want to share some of my own sort of philosophy. There was something in here about they had denied. What was that phrase in this article?
Their true self.
Yeah. Now, this is the thing. How many people out there have denied your true self, you know, in the last week? You know, I got really ticked off the other day. I wanted to smack somebody. I really, really got, you know, raging mad over something. I wanted to take Mr. Hand and turn him into Mr. Fist, Mr. Foot into Mr. Kick somebody. I didn't. You know why? Because I'm a human being, and one thing that makes human beings different from animals is that we control our impulses. Dogs, they smell food, they eat. They smell another dog that's of a different gender. Nature takes its course. The difference between human beings and animals is that we have self-discipline and self-restraint. We don't act like our true selves, or we'll have barbarity. We'll have savagery. That's the whole point.
Well, some of these homosexual acts, I think, are some of these are just they're just people who have no self control and they get, you know, sexual urges. They're out like say out and tending the sheep for months and months, and they have no power over themselves. And they find some. It's a lot of it's not even homosexual. It's just it's like these blacks and a lot of the blacks and others in the prisons that commit these homosexual acts. And by the way, every time you see a movie, I saw the movie the other day called The Butterfly Effect, one of these download movies, and it was about a man who somehow in his dreams he can go back and affect the past. It was typical of the Jewish Hollywood movies. He's a white guy. He's sent into prison. And guess what? He's threatened with rape. By whom? By white guys. In fact, members of the Brotherhood, meaning like the Aryan Brotherhood. And the guys who were going to rape him or have sexually abuse him are like white, super white, clean cut, you know, white, strong white guys in prison. And of course, the guy that protects him is a Mexican guy, a non-European person in the prison. And anybody who's been in the prison knows it's just exactly the other way around. In fact, anybody involved in the white groups frowns on homosexuality or any sort of act like that would even think, you know, would think that was the most disgusting thing in the world to have some sort of sexual relations between men. And it's just, you know, but again, the movies just turn everything around, and that's the typical aspect of Hollywood. And just like this Brokeback Mountain, it just is a complete inversion of all the values of our culture, our civilization, and our manhood.
Yeah, I mean, there are some very attractive ladies in the area that I live in and go to school. But, you know, I have self-restraint, not just self-restraint, respect for them as human beings, and I have my own self-discipline, because I've got to study. I really don't have time to go, you know, running around dating every night and so on and so forth. But the difference, one of the main differences between us and the animals is self-control. And what they're promoting here is the opposite. They want people to basically act like animals. I mean, it's probably easier to be an animal than a human being. You just smell something, you see something you want, you take it. It's a road towards absolute social chaos that we're talking about.
Well, like a lot of these, and I was saying this, and I lost my point, but the guy distracted. But a lot of these blacks in prison, and if you take a look at the data and so forth, a lot of these blacks, they're not necessarily homosexual. They just they're just doing like an animal, whatever feels good. It's even if it's in some other guy's body, you know. I mean, disgusting, you know. They just do whatever they do to have this physical sensation. This physical lust, this physical sexual lust satisfied. You know, it's absolutely, and that's exactly what I think some of the homosexuals are. They're like a lower kind of creature that will just do anything. So there are people out there that do bestiality. It's the same kind of principle. There are people out there.
There was some man in Germany who wanted to kill somebody and eat him, and he found, believe it or not, somebody wanted to be killed and eaten. Do you remember that case of cannibalism? Good Lord, I mean, this is really just, you know, off the deep end here. And as far as adults consenting and all this, it's okay if they consent. Well, it really has become the proverbial, you know, people in the life raft and so on. Things are really going off the deep end these days. They're confusing real freedoms, which is freedom of thought, freedom of speech, which we don't even have anymore, with the freedom of perversity, promiscuity, anarchy, social chaos. The chaos and freedom are not the same thing.
Listen to this. This is garbage. This is on the second page of the Washington Post article. Again, the Washington Post is one of the three key cultural newspapers in the United States.
Yeah,
Washington
I call
Post,
it the,
Washington D.C.
the Compost.
You got the new, yeah, the Compost. You got the New York Times, and of course, Los Angeles Times. Those are the three, and of course, the Wall Street Journal has a big impact. And to show you how sick this is. The guy says this is earlier in the review. He says the movie is not something which is a propaganda piece for homosexuality. Then he writes this quote: "Homosexuality in Brokeback Mountain is always associated with a river. It's a great torrent of nature which cannot be controlled and which provides sustenance, nurture,
yeah,
satisfaction,
nurture. Here we go.
And joy.
Joy.
The happiest image in the film and the most poignant is Ennis and Jack off." By their lonesome, pulling off their clothes and leaping into the welcoming waters below. Realistically, it's a river. Metaphorically, it's the great river of homosexuality. And safe and free immersion in it is utterly joyful to them.
Safe immersion. Yeah, they
indeed.
Can
most of the two men squabbling and mostly off camera lovemaking takes place next to a river. It's glimpsed in many of the backgrounds. Usually a turmoil, frothing white water to signify the Russian power of their love and lust for each other. Sometimes it's calming.
It's making me
it's
nauseous.
It's sick
here.
As hell.
It makes me nauseous.
Yeah. Anybody healthy would be. And this is what's being presented to the American people. I mean, this is what's being presented to our children as the proper course of action. This is what's being taught to our kids, by the way, in school.
Yeah, these guys can't just go swimming in a river.
Kids in high school now are assigned to read homosexual writings and so forth that are just like this, you know. So it's telling all those kids, if they're a little bit, like I say, a little bit questionable in terms of their sexual identity, that it's okay. So when that older man tries to seduce them, and by the way, that's the way that most homosexuals, boys, that got involved in this thing was through older males, much older males, generally speaking, much older males. Well, you see, most females and males heterosexually are introduced into sex by people of their similar age group. All right, most homosexuals are seduced by an older male, a trusted friend, and they basically twist their mind, their values, and everything else. And it's just amazing. And this is the kind of thing that's being promoted.
Yeah. Well, if you look at primates, other species, especially gorillas, chimpanzees, and something called bonobo, B-O-N-O-B-O. If you want to know about human sexual behavior, study the bonobo. You'll find out that this is really more submission. It has to do with submissiveness and rank and social ordering among a lot of these primates. It's not anything terribly sexual. It's a more of a sociological practice. And what it basically is the stronger males humiliate the weaker ones. And it really is sort of disturbing when you think about it. Not only are these people being deviant, they're also to a large extent being submissive, being in a primate sense. And that's exactly what a lot of people would like to turn our people into, is submissives. They want us to basically, be under a certain power and influence and so on. And that's interesting what you said about most of these people are, seduced and corrupted by someone, I guess, older, an authority figure or whatnot. Hollywood itself is to some extent an authority figure. It provides your entertainment. Unfortunately, provides your philosophy, mm-hmm. even your values mm-hmm. today. Those things used to come through your education, your church, your right. community, your culture, your parents, maybe, who are now off working like 80, 100 hours a week just to pay the light bill. Television is raising these children.
You know, another thing that this movie completely focuses on these two homosexuals, and of course, again, they're fictional homosexuals. I don't know how many cowboys ever got in a situation like that. I think this is one of those things they draw out of thin air. Homosexuals are famous for writing that. In fact, there was another homosexual just recently who's just been exposed, who says he's an Indian. He wrote these books about the Indians and so forth.
But Easter American Indians.
American Indians, about growing up on the reservation, about his autistic child. This child had a disease that died. Turned out he was a raging homosexual. Used to live in Key West, and he was a white guy, and he just made up the whole story in the New York Times, and all printed this garbage. But anyway, the movie focuses entirely on these homosexuals. All right, what their their lust, their feelings, their sadness and loneliness after they're exposed, but interesting enough, the movie doesn't focus, from what I've read, doesn't focus on what happened to their families, the destruction, their children, You know, if you looked at it from the standpoint of the wives and the children, it would be an entirely different story, wouldn't it? It would be about selfish, undisciplined, greedy, sick homosexuals, all right, who basically abandoned their families, their responsibilities, their children, and destroyed their families and the lives of the people around them, just to fulfill this sick quest of theirs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that some man who's hitting 60, whatever, his wife's in her 50s, 60s, maybe older than him, which is a good thing, because typically women live a little longer. Not a bad idea to have a wife with a couple of years if you statistically want to grow old together. And, most men are attracted to, young, pretty women and so forth. But if they run off with the younger, prettier women, that's perceived by society as selfish, and this man's children may feel resentment towards it. Exactly, but they don't seem to mention that here. I don't want to digress too much. Along the same lines, corrupting society, that's what I'm talking about, corrupting the sexuality, the sexual values and so on, family values of society, is not new. Do you remember Margaret Mead? What was it, the 1930s, 20s, and so on? You remember who Margaret Mead, the sociologist?
Of course, she went to Samoa.
Yeah, now she went to these South Pacific islands that back then, you see, today you got the internet, you can get a pen pal or something, ask them about, what's Samoa like and so on. You can read about Samoan culture and so on. You can go to Samoa for a couple hundred bucks, stay in a hotel.
Well, she made up an entirely false story.
There was a bunch of fertilizer, let's just say. Yeah, somebody actually went back and even asked some of these people of the same age and so on. All these things Margaret Mead said, that you practiced free love and so on.
And that you didn't have the traumas of growing up that you had in America. And you didn't have, and of course it turned out to be totally false. They had just the same problems, if not more so, than what they had in the United States.
Oh, absolute hogwash. No, this is...
In fact, there was a fine professor, an Australian professor, who revealed it, who studied it all, went to Samoa, studied the whole situation, and revealed that her book, which was a famous book, in fact, the book had a big impact on changing American sexual morality. And a big impact in America. It's one of the most famous, and all the big Jewish newspapers and the television programs all pushed this book, and about how that this says we need to break down the old Victorian, style of America, the more respectful sexual style, and yet he showed that her book and her research was absolute, complete, as you said, fertilizer,
yeah, and the powers that, not so much be, but the wannabe powers, are pushing the same thing with cowboys and American Indians and everything else.
Well, we've gone over time, Bob, so, thanks for being with us today. It was a very interesting discussion. I hope that, I believe that our listeners will find it such. And this might be a good one to spread around, folks. And use your fingers, spread the word. We've got to do some work still on our streaming aspect, but all the files are certainly available and download. Soon they'll be available in streaming as well. But that's our new system that we've got going here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Also, I have a text from my radio program yesterday on Ariel Sharon primarily, and revealing the true evil character of this man, a man that the media now is eulogizing as a man of peace and telling us
we comment real fast on that? Yeah, Ariel Sharon's peace plan. What is it? Peace, P-I-E-C-E. What it's about. Now, imagine that you said, look, I'd like to keep an America that's, basically Christian and European and so on. So let's take New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California, and just take all of the Mexicans we can find and Hispanics and so on, stick them, deport them there, and then put up a border and make that part of another country. I mean, that's basically what his peace plan's about. It's about apartheid of some weird sort.
Which is condemned by all the Western society. For whites, if whites try to have their own society, that's condemned. But if Israel does it, it's great.
We can't have our own state.
And also the purpose, the reason why, it was not some sort of Ariel Sharon just giving up this land for peace. It wasn't about giving up the land for peace. If you read all the Israeli documents and their commentators and their politicians, The way they sold this to the Israeli people is that this is how we preserve the Jewish people, that there's a demographic threat. We can't take all this land because if we assimilate with these Palestinians who are more numerous, then and we have democracy with them, then Israel ceases to exist. So it was not presented as an idea that we're going to give up this land for peace. In fact, they took so much land. In fact, they took a lot more than they gave up. But you know, what they did basically was do this because this is the way that they would preserve their genetic heritage.
Yeah.
Interesting, huh?
Oh, yeah, but it's verboten if you are of the Gentile persuasion.
Of course. Well, that's about it. We just are out of time now, but, you know, thanks a lot for being with us. And you have you got a couple more years of medical school going on. You got a couple more to finish, huh?
Quite a few.
But you've gone through almost two now, so
yeah,
you're over the biggest hump, huh?
The basic courses, yeah. The first year is the hardest. The second year is rough, and then it gets sort of downhill.
Well, for our listeners who don't know, Bob is a fine engineer. He's got a degree from Georgia Tech,
the
most famous engineering university in the United States, and he's got a master's degree. In fact, he graduated summa cum laude, not magna cum laude, but summa cum laude, which is the highest, you know, which is the highest possible diploma, and that's in an engineering curriculum, which isn't the very easiest. I mean, as you know, there's a lot of mathematics and calculus and all the rest in that, and he was a computer engineer designer for a number of years, and he decided that he wanted to become a doctor, and now he's studying in Moscow. Thanks a lot for being with us, Bob. We'll talk about more of that next time you're with us. In fact, we'll probably get another discussion on what's happening here in Russia. Appreciate everything, and I'll see you very soon, and I'll see all of you tomorrow on our radio program again. Thank you so much. Until then, God bless and take care.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information, and to support our vital work, please visit www.DavidDuke.com.